When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back to the EPL Roundtable podcast. I am your host today, Jake Jackman, standing in for Kev. You can reach the show on Twitter at EPL Roundtable or email us eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jay. I'm editor of the Eagles Beak, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. I'm also a presenter of a local community sports radio show, the Meridian Sports Show. You can get me at the Eagles Beak, for the Eagles Beak, obviously, and at the Meridian SS for the radio show.
Hi, I'm Dan, Arsenal fan. You can get me on Twitter at @_jersey_fits.
Hi, everyone. It's Joshy here. I'm a Manchester United fan. You can get me on Twitter at MediJoshy, MediJoshy. And I do various podcasts and YouTube stuff. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. We'll start with the topics, and the first one is on the television broadcasting in the UK. Always a big topic, but especially now with fans not in the stadium for at least another month, and even if they do go back, most stadiums won't be full. At the time of recording, 160 matches of 380 will not be shown on television in the UK next year. I know myself that none of the Newcastle games have been shown in September, so I have no legal way of watching that, which is a bit of a disappointment, but I'm sure there's other clubs in the same situation. There is a possibility that this could change over the next week. There's been a lot of pressure from fan groups for the Premier League to make these games available, whether that's on Sky or if clubs could sell broadcasting passes for specific matches. Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on what you think would be the best way forward for the Premier League, and do you think it would be feasible for them not to show these games at all?
I think it's ridiculous, to be honest. I mean, it's a difficult situation for everybody. But until I'm a little bit aggrieved at the fact that, you know, they're allowing a certain percentage of fans into the ground. My view is that we either let all fans go back in or none at all. But obviously, we can't penalise fans who would normally go and see, you know, every Palace game, home and away. And we're facing a situation where we're not going to be able to do that. There's going to be very limited tickets, and that's just the way it's going to happen. I mean, I'm just about to pay for my season ticket for next season, and I face only potentially being able to go to two or three games, if that, you know, it's the way it's going to work out. So, yeah, things could change going into next year, obviously, for better or for worse. We don't know. It's all a very difficult situation. But I think there's a lot of frustration among fan groups, and my group particularly have campaigned quite vociferously about the fact that, you know, we're sitting here facing the fact that we can't go and see our team. You know, I'm a football fan, so I watch a lot of football. I like watching other teams as well as my own. I enjoy football full stop, as a lot of football fans do. But the pure fact of not being able to go and see my team play is extremely frustrating when I'm actually going to shell out for a season ticket as well. It seems a ludicrous situation to be in, heading into a brand new campaign after all the stops are pulled out. Let's face it, all the stops are pulled out for that 6-week period to get the season done, last season done, the extended season as it was. Show all the games, fans couldn't go. But just a simple thought that, you know, because a 2,500 up to 5,000 fans can go to a game, it seems to be that, you know, we're not worried about everybody else. You know, some fans can go to games. Let's not worry about the rest. It's a really horrible situation to be in. I know it must be difficult. I mean, you know, I've seen a lot recently about returning to offices and returning to college and being involved in my daughter's return to college this week and the arrangements for that. And I get it. It's so difficult to sort things out at the moment. But I'm still in the camp where I personally think that, you know, if all fans can't go back into the ground, none of them should. And obviously this TV situation just adds salt to the wounds at the moment. You know, it's a really difficult time for a lot of people. A lot of people can't pay out for certain things and stuff like that. Football is, it really is an escapism, just like any other sport for football fans. So, yeah, it's a really frustrating time. And I understand the financial impact and all that kind of thing. But if they could do it for the last, you know, that 6 weeks to get the Premier League done, you know, couple of months ago, then what? I'm not sure why they can't do it until things start to improve this campaign. We don't know what the outlook's going to be, do we? Let's face it. But it's all a little bit hypothetical. But that's my view anyway. I don't know what you other guys think about it.
Yeah, I obviously don't know the logistics of all that. But considering they were able to show all the games for the 6 weeks to finish last season, I don't know what the difference would be for doing the same now, especially when there are no fans, at least for now. Like, I know sports leagues have been trying to crack down on illegal streaming. It's like, what do you want me to do? Stare at my phone and refresh while, like, hoping my team wins? Like, you're giving me no way to watch the game, whether that be shelling out for a game ticket or watching on TV. There's no way for me to do this. And that just seems a bit ridiculous. Like, people have zero option to see the games. So obviously, you know, preface that with, I don't know the logistics of everything with the TV contracts and all that, but it does seem, just from my lack of knowledge view, that it's a bit ridiculous considering they were able to do it for the last 6 weeks. Why not just do it again until fans are allowed back in, as Jay says, maybe even for when all fans are allowed back in, because even if it's a limited amount, then that's still a lot of people with no option to watch the game. And it's not even a matter of like, oh, you're not spending the money to go watch. It's like, I literally don't have the option. That's not possible. So for that to be the case seems a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, I think I kind of echo those things. And it's a strange one for me because, I missed some of the announcements. So at one point, I thought they were going to be showing all of the matches next season. And at that stage, I thought it might be worth shelling out on a subscription for Sky and or BT, right? So actually, from that point of view, it might benefit TV companies if they're able to do that. But at the moment, they're not. The other thing that kind of triggered me into trying potentially subscribing to Sky again was the fact they sacked quite a few of their current pundits. So I was kind of, that might be interesting. But yeah, I think, I mean, there's not much more to add other than the fact that, look, if we can't all go back, we want to be able to watch the games. It's clearly logistically feasible. And, you know, there are options. And I think it was an opportunity for a bit of innovation as well, right? So as I understand it, in the US, you can get kind of season passes for your team. I think NFL, I'm not sure, but you know, so
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, you can do that for NFL, yeah, and then for football, you can subscribe to NBC Gold and you get all the games. You just have to watch them on the computer.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. It was an opportunity for a bit of innovation, you know, a bit of fan-centric kind of thinking, and they still would have made money. So, they've sort of. What about fans, which is standard practice when you consider things like, even just when things were normal, you know, and fans wanted to go to stadiums and they were, you know, having to travel, train times were always a ridiculous thing. That you'd have, you know, FA Cup semi-finals being played in London when both teams were up from up north, you know, things like that where it didn't really work out. And again, it's just come here as well. And this is much, much easier logistically. It's just a case of, right, let's sort out some kind of fan pass. You know, you can do that. If you can download a movie from Sky, you can subscribe to surely a season ticket for all United games or all whatever games you want to watch, or to every game if you want a monthly subscription, something like that. I don't know. I think they've missed a trick, and it's just, again, the fans being ignored. It's pretty much standard practice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really weird situation. Won't go into the Newcastle takeover, that was very centred on broadcast partners and they were getting involved in things like that. So they were very protective of them. They've obviously had other issues this past week with the Chinese broadcast deal getting cancelled, or so there's no legal way to watch the Premier League in China either, which again isn't really great. But you think their focus should really be on the UK first and foremost, and they could do it through Sky, they could do it through BT, they could come to some sort of arrangement. I think there's already a rebate that needs to be paid, so maybe that could be offset a little bit by giving them more games at the start of this season until fans can be completely back. Members could pay per game to watch as well, because then that way it still cracks out, it still gives Sky and BT that sort of exclusivity. And it is really only the fans of those clubs that can watch the matches if they aren't on TV. But I think something will happen this week. It seems that the sort of mood music seems to be that the supporters' trusts and the government will get some sort of arrangement with the Premier League to broadcast these games. But it does seem very strange that with a week to go to the season, there will be supporters that can't watch their games.
This is a knock-on effect of completing last season, and we're going to see it for the next 12 to 18 months, even into the following season. Like, you're seeing it these international matches now. They're a complete joke. It should not be happening, right? The players have been running to the ground, and they're playing international games three weeks after the season ended, a week before the season starting. It's a joke. And this TV thing is also a kind of a bit of a knock-on effect, right? All the effort was put into completing last season, and now they're kind of going, oh, well, now what do we do? What I don't get is Premier League, I'm not sure, how do they lose out if they open up these matches? This is kind of where maybe I don't have enough knowledge about the kind of intricacies of how they make their money. But if the Premier League say to Sky and BT, you can have the matches, then how do they lose out on money versus not allowing them to have the matches? I don't really get that.
If I had to guess, and this is obviously a guess, I don't know, it's something to do with they negotiate, like, you can have X number of matches, and they would want to renegotiate to allow them to have them all. That's a guess. I don't know. But again, as you say, it seems like it's almost so easy that, like, the fact that they're not doing it feels like I'm missing something.
Yeah, I think I'm missing something as well. Because either way, they're going to have the same amount of money coming from Sky and BT, right? As far as I can tell. And this is what I mean by they've missed out on a bit of innovation here. If they just, like, you know, you mentioned a couple of other options that they could do on their own website and their own kind of broadcasting, which would be quite, I'm not going to say it's going to be easy, like, you know, click your fingers and it's all good to go. But, you know, it's not going to be that difficult to work out how to broadcast online. I mean, plenty of people do it on their own websites. So it's a weird one, and I feel like I am missing a part of a link in this story as to why it's become such an issue.
I completely agree. I think that it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here, because I for one know that if I'm not able to watch my team on Saturday, I'm going to go online and look for a way that I can, and I'm sure I'm not going to be the only one.
Yeah, I mean, what is strange is, like, I was born in Zambia, go back quite a lot, and I haven't been back in a while, but I know that they get their, basically on match days, instead of having, they use SuperSport, right? So I think it's a South African company. And on match days, it goes from 4 SuperSport channels to like 12 or something like that to accommodate every single match. And, you know, I'm just, you know, there's another kind of example of how a company's able to do that. And they get to watch every single match, including the 3 o'clock kickoffs. But in the UK, we don't, which is, and in this situation, it feels even more ridiculous than normal. But anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Moving on to the next topic, a fun one to go into, the transfer window.
It seemed to have taken on a lot for itself recently.
Chelsea ended last season losing an FA Cup final, but now everybody's talking about them as title contenders because they've won the transfer window. It all seems like a game within itself, and it's become so ridiculous, really. And if I look at each transfer that's made by a Premier League club, I can see everybody says it's a good transfer, and I rarely see an incoming player be greeted with "that's a bad transfer." But it just seems every transfer is good. So it's all... It's all become a little bit too much for me, and I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on how the transfer window has evolved.
Jake, I have to agree with a lot of points you said there. I detest the transfer window and everything that goes with it. I mean, I run a fan site, as you know, a Palace fan site, and just the ramping up of fan frustration and the toxic atmosphere across the off season is just ridiculous by all these so-called transfer in the know accounts. It's difficult to sift out any that are actually legitimate. It's a really horrible time of the season. I don't enjoy it in the slightest. I think you mentioned Chelsea there, and you know, I think we talked about this on a podcast earlier on a few months ago, when obviously, you know, we were looking ahead to how the Premier League was going to kind of finish last season, and we talked about football not being the same again, and a lot of what's happened over the past few weeks has really surprised me. Maybe that's foolish. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised by anything that happens in football ever. But you know, we talked about inflated prices wouldn't happen again, and clubs wouldn't be able to afford to pay certain transfer fees. And you know, we're looking at Chelsea is one thing, because obviously they've had a war chest saved from, you know, the last couple of transfers where they haven't been able to pay bring anybody in, and they've clearly been frustrated for a fair while, which is why they're splashing the cash a fair bit now. But yeah, the likes of, you know, Wolves spending 35 million on what 18-19 year old recently puts pressure on, well, fans and clubs, and you know, in a similar position in the Premier League, to actually, you know, be looking to spend money. And not every club can do that, particularly in the current situation we find ourselves. I think some clubs will always be able to spend that money. Chelsea, United to a certain extent, City, Liverpool haven't really spent anything as yet, but do they need to is another question. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of transfer window. It was okay to start with. I'm more of an advocate of not having any transfers during the season. Once the season starts, that's it. And you know, coaches earn their crust by being a coach and coaching the players. No bailout in January, and that's pretty much it. You've got a squad of players, and you go with it. How practical that is, I don't know, but that wouldn't avoid the fact that you'll have the transfer window in the summer, and it'll probably be a lot worse than it is now. But yeah, I try and avoid. I mean, I'm not big on transfer rooms at all. From what we do at Eagles Beak, we don't get involved in that kind of thing. We don't normally share stuff from certain in the know accounts, and it just whips fans up into a frenzy for no particular reason. And you know, fans are silly enough to get involved in that and get frustrated by that, then I guess perhaps you know they probably shouldn't be on social media. But it really is it's a horrible time of for football particularly, and yeah, I don't enjoy it in the slightest. I don't get involved in it, and just at the moment it's all you see on social media actually. In terms of fans wanting this, wanting that, we should be doing this, we should be doing that. I guess it's a culture we're now kind of enjoying. And you know, I'm not going to be negative about social media, because a lot of what's happened to my fan account has come through social media and been able to promote it through that, and that's been really good. But I think, you know, the question was about whether the transfer window's evolved. I think it's evolved into something very different. It's a very different monster now to what it was before. Deadline day is very different. You know, you don't really get the last minute deals that we used to have on the first perhaps two or three transfer windows we had. That was probably more enjoyable back then, but that kind of smacks of clubs being desperate and leaving to last minute, which normally included Palace, I'll be honest. But yeah, I'm not a big fan. It's just a media frenzy, and a media frenzy that all the big names get involved in. You know, Sky Sports, I'll mention as one, being one of the protagonists, particularly, you know, Sky Sources, that kind of thing. Well, you know, if they've got any other sources on what happens on Twitter, then I'll be very surprised.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, it's really turned into a lot, but I don't know if that's entirely surprising. Like, NBA is also kind of having the same thing. Lots of people are like, oh, are people more excited about free agency, which is our version of that, than the actual season itself? I'd say, honestly, I think it's less of an issue for football because the regular season matters more. They don't have the whole playoff regular season issue, but I don't know. It's a lot. People like hope, and that's kind of what the transfer window is. It's selling you hope. Like, oh, we could get X. We could get Y. We could spend a bajillion pounds. And I don't know. I think the more you get used to it, the more you kind of filter out the ridiculousness. Obviously, most people don't do that. So you get the people who are just kind of having that hope when there's not really any hope there. It's false hope. I guess that's really what the window sells, is false hope. I don't think it's that surprising that it's big, because people love new players, love shiny new toys, and that's, you can get that. I don't know if there's necessarily a way that we can do this better, so it kind of is what it is. Other than, you know, people on Twitter learning, like, okay, Indycalia is not a reliable source. You're not signing Messi. Calm down. Although City actually could sign Messi. Probably not now, but, you know. It is what it is. People love hope. People love new toys. That's what the transfer window is. I'm not shocked it's big. I don't think it's going to change. And I've kind of learned to live with it. It is what it is.
Yeah, Josh, it might be interesting to get your thoughts on this, because Manchester United finished higher than Chelsea last season. You signed a player in January who did go on and transform your team and made you look a lot better. And yet, even now, I see Manchester United fans on social media saying, oh, Chelsea signed all these players, now they are better than us, with very little to go off other than they have signed these players that have done well elsewhere. There's no guarantee they'll do well here. I think I read one Chelsea fan saying this is the best summer transfer window of any club in the history of English football, which, you know, is a brave thing to say without any of them kicking a ball for their team. So do you sort of think it's a little bit overhyped, in the Chelsea example in particular? Do you think that, do you now think they're guaranteed to finish up above Manchester United purely on these signings?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the guys have hit the nail on the head with the window. It's an absolute farce, and it's just I try to stay out of the all the kind of rumours and things like that. With regards to your question, I think, you know, Chelsea have had a good window on paper, but it, like you say, there's no guarantee. It looks like they've signed a good profile of player, in fairness. It's not like just, it doesn't feel too massively scattergun. They've brought in players, good age, good pedigree generally, and with it comes the fees, right? So I think it's not necessarily like just, let's go and sign everyone that we can. So from that point of view, I think they've had a good window. I mean, I saw that thread where they said these have been definitively the greatest transfers in Premier League history. I mean, they said Premier of the modern era. So I'm assuming the Premier League history is the modern era, depending on how old that guy is. But yeah, I think what they represent is, it's kind of like the potential for what this team could be, right? Regardless of whether it's Chelsea, United, whoever. We saw at the end of last season that United, we pretty much stuck with a core group of around 11 to 13 odd players who were just constantly on the pitch every game. And by the time we hit, you know, when we brought in the weaker players or the second string against, you know, in the FA Cup, and then we struggled. And then against Sevilla, we just didn't have any legs in the Europa League, right? We just kind of ran out of steam. And in the end, we do need reinforcements. So over the course of a Premier League season with Champions League as well, you can see that being a big issue for a squad that's pretty much reliant on a small group of players. So for United, I can see why people are saying Chelsea are are in a much stronger position than United, despite the way in which we finished the season. That said, you're hoping that there's going to be a bit more maturity from the likes of Greenwood and Brandon Williams, who did really well. So, and we've got we have signed a midfielder who gives us options for some of those players that were looking knackered, like Bruno Fernandes. So, there's still time as well. So we'll see what happens. The window itself, I think, I just, it's a pain. It's a real pain because you do get all of this stuff just coming at you and people pretending they know stuff. I mean, the Donny van de Beek transfer is a really good example of actually people aren't as in the know as they think they are, right? Or they pretend to be, because that started doing the rounds on social media. And then 2 days or 3 days later, it was pretty much official, right? And he'd been announced. It's not a transfer that's been kind of widely reported over the last 3, 4, 5 months. So it tells you that these guys don't have a hotline into Ed Woodward. They're just kind of fishing and seeing what they can come up with for clicks. I mean, a lot of these journalists do have, and actually things do change in transfers, right? So, the fact that United might be going for Jadon Sancho and they may have been close at one point, but then things stalled. I can see that being realistic. But then if you tally up, and it won't just be for United, it will be for every Premier League club. They'll probably be linked to, 20, 30, 40. I mean, United will be up in the hundreds, I'm pretty sure, of players linked to coming to the club. And people have used us in the past to get new contracts, and Sergio Ramos was a famous one. So, I just ignore things as much as possible until they're kind of wearing the shirt. And even then, if you remember when Louis van Gaal was manager, United went out and bought, I think it was Di Maria, Falcao, Schweinsteiger, Schneiderlin. It was that transfer window. I thought, oh, wow, okay, we've done some good business here. And it turned out to be just chucking money at big names, and it didn't quite work out. And I'm not saying that's what Chelsea have done, but it's kind of an example. And Tottenham, after they sold Gareth Bale, they went out and bought a whole ton of players. So, and Chelsea have done it after having sold Eden Hazard. So that I would say, if any Chelsea fan is listening, that to sort of go in with some caution in terms of how you claim these transfers to go. But in the end, if it works out, that you can only judge a transfer at the end of it, right? Nobody talks about how much Cristiano Ronaldo cost Juventus because he's banging in goals. He's doing his part of the business. And you only judge the transfer at the end, right? Once they've finished their careers or whatever. So, yeah, I think the window is what it is. We have to kind of live with it. And I don't think there's any way you can improve it. It's people want to make money off these things and clicks and whatnot. So we go with it. From a United perspective, I hope the window evolves and we sign a few more players just to fill some of the gaps that we do have in the team.
Yeah, you get these accounts come up every summer that go off newspapers and sort of tweet things that are slightly believable, and if they come off, they retweet themselves saying, look, I've got this knowledge. I could go and make an account like that and get 10,000 followers in the next 4 weeks. It's not difficult.
Arsenal have a horse and a bell that are apparently ITK. It's great.
No, I made an account like that as a joke, not as a joke, as an experiment, and it gained a ton of followers very quickly. And all I did was look at betting odds and the latest stories, and then put like some predictive tweets out, as in predicting transfers. And then when they went through, you just hype yourself. And the ones that don't go through, you delete them. It's really easy. Actually, I can't remember where that is now. I need to find it. Yeah, but it was, that kind of announced that I was only prattling, making it all up kind of thing, and then it sort of lost traction. Nobody cared about someone making things up, obviously.
Yeah, it's all very vague language, and it's the language that we all see on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I do like an income transfer for my own team, but I just think, yeah, it's evolving. You know, every year, we had 4 or 5 years ago, you had Sky Sports that did a deadline day coverage. They still do that, but it used to be where you found your news. You rarely see a transfer happen out of nothing. It is rare to get things like that now. You normally hear about an interest months in advance of a player signing, and it's getting the coverage of every single part of the deal as it progresses is just a little bit tiresome as opposed to what it used to be. But that is the social media, and I guess that is just only going to get worse.
I always find the language amusing, right? So things like Manchester United are preparing a bid. Okay? So how do you prepare a bid? Or they're monitoring the situation closely. So you're sort of going, okay, so what, they've got a crew of spies just checking it out. It's just all this language around transfers is pretty hilarious. And when you think about it, there's no way it happens that way. It's not like you sort of go, right, call the bank manager, how much cash do we have? Okay, cool. You sort of know all of these things. It's all done through relationships and phone calls and conversations. It's not really done in the way you think it is, or you would think it is by reading all of these reports. But yeah, no, it's amusing, but I can't wait for it to be done every year. This is the stage as well, about 3 weeks to go, right, in the window, or has it been extended?
I think it closes at the start of October, doesn't it? Like maybe the 12th?
Yes, about a month-ish. So now it will get silly season. It's kind of, this is now when it just get totally silly because people are, you know, clubs will be desperate and then everyone will be linked with everyone. It will be, oh God, it will be unbearable.
Yeah. Not a lover of transfers, but I'll start on the transfers. There seems to be a little bit to talk about with Palace. They seem to be trying to lower their squad age, which I think is quite an important thing for them to do. Nathan Ferguson's come in. Obviously, Eze is coming from QPR. How do you sort of rate the transfers that you have completed, and are you encouraged to see younger players coming into the club?
Yeah, definitely. I think after the last few years, and obviously last season, it has really hyped up that we have probably the oldest squad in the Premier League. I think there's a number of times that we had the oldest first 11 being rolled out onto the pitch, and we didn't do too badly for a bunch of veterans, really, when you think about it. But I think the ethos this time around is clear that it's with a view to transitioning this season into a squad which dramatically has the average age brought down. With the signing of Nathan Ferguson, I think that was one which was pretty much done in January, really, until it was revealed that he had a knee, had to have knee surgery. So it didn't go over the line by the time the transfer window closed in January, but it was always on the cards as soon as the window opened in the summer. So that's a really good addition for us, because ever since we lost Aaron Wan-Bissaka, we never replaced him. We relied on Joel Ward to come back into the side, who lost his place to Aaron Wan-Bissaka when he got injured, and Wan-Bissaka never looked back after that. But with just one natural right back during the season, I mean, no disrespect to Joel Ward, he did a fantastic job last season. I think it probably was the best option in play in that position, actually. And it seemed like he played knowing that actually there was nobody else left to play in that position, unless it was like a square peg in a round hole. So fair play to him. But obviously he needs competition and he's not getting any younger. I think some people would argue that he's not actually a Premier League player, a defender. But actually, I think last season proved that he has far more brains as a defender as he's getting older than he has pace, and he did really well for the majority, so fair play to him. But Nathan Ferguson will come in and challenge Joel for a lot of the season. Whether Nathan Ferguson will actually start for us, he's still getting over that knee injury, that remains to be seen. But Eze is the one for us. I mean, that is a big signing for us, and I think it's a bit of a marquee signing, really. Probably one of the marquee signings, well, one of the biggest signings for us in terms of, you know, outlook and approach to a transfer window. It's been no secret that we've been interested in him for a while. We've been watching him play, and I think he fits. You know, I think he just fits with the whole way Palace do things. He hasn't got to move house because he's just travelling this short trip across London from QPR. QPR seemed like a need to sell him, and having spoken to QPR fans, I have to say, I mean, they're gutted to lose him, but you know, he comes to Palace with the glowing reference, and a number of other clubs were interested but didn't obviously make a bid. Other than I think West Brom were interested, West Ham couldn't because they had to sell players before buying, as far as I believe it. So we were kind of freed up a fair bit to agree that deal. And I think if we manage to keep Wilf this summer, which, you know, the closer we get to transfer window, the more nervous, the closer we get to the end of the transfer window, the more nervous it gets. If we have Wilf and Eze in this side, and we bring in a striker, which is rumoured to happen before next weekend, then I think it will do what we needed to do in this window. I think it was a hugely important window for us, and one where we had to get things right from both an age perspective and a needs perspective. And the needs were a right back, a bit of a flair player to give Wilf a break if he was going to stay, or even a replacement if Wilf does go. And also, you know, a striker, because we've had a good pre-season. But it's our biggest problem is we can't finish chances we're creating, and we just need that guy up front. Christian Benteke has got a toe injury, which he ended the season with. And he also, Connor Wickham, which I'll be surprised if he's still at the club by the time the transfer window ends. Still a couple of more needs, but I think the outlook is looking good from Palace perspective. And to be honest, reading all the predictions from a lot of the so-called pundits suggesting Palace going to go down this season will just work in our favour, to be quite honest with you. I think there's far worse squads in this Premier League than there are us. And, you know, we've got a bit of know-how in this Premier League. And, you know, youth is great. Youth is really good to have in your squad. But I don't think there's a lot. You can have a lot better than experience in a squad. And we have that in abundance. So I think we'll be all right. A couple more additions before the end of the transfer window, and we'll go into it. We just need to make sure we start well, because we ended the season on a poor run of form. But with that new blood in the side, somebody exciting like Eze, you know, to light up a game every now and again, you know, it won't be just on Wilf's shoulders, you know, if he stays. So the outlook's looking okay for us at the moment, and we're doing the right thing in this window. Still more needs, potentially going into January and next summer. But yeah, a bit of transition going on, but we'll be all right.
Yeah, I think it's important to, when you are trying to transition, you don't want to do it all in one summer. Palace, you mentioned Zaha there, probably the reason you hate the transfer window is Wilfred Zaha.
every transfer window, it's Wilfred. I think it's almost 4 years now, I think it's been very much the same. And obviously last summer was very fraught with him handing a transfer request 24 hours before the window close, which, you know, not lots going to happen in that short space of time. But I just, you know, I just hope, but I wonder if he's actually priced himself out of the market. He didn't have a great season last season. You know, whether you look at the big clubs in the Premier League, you know, they filled certain gaps, you know, some of the destinations, potential destinations like Arsenal, even Everton, are filled gaps that, you know, Wilf could probably fill. So I'm hopeful that he's going to stick around, and it's not going to be another 4 weeks of Wilf. Is Wilf going to be stay or go? But the only slight worry I have is that he's had an excellent pre-season. So, you know, if he carries it on to the first few games of the season, there's still time for, you know, somebody to come in. And, you know, I don't see Wilf as a gamble. I'm really surprised he's still with us. I just don't see him as a gamble, because he's a seasoned Premier League player. You know, he can turn it on at the click of a finger. You know, the only downside is that, you know, his wage expectations are quite high. Palace want to be paid well for him, which is only right. He's our prized asset. I wouldn't be hugely disappointed as I would have been in previous transfer windows if he does go this summer, because we've got Eze coming in who really looks like he's going to be a star, you know, after talking to QPR fans. And, you know, it's a long way to go for him. He's a young player. He's not playing in the Premier League. But, you know, from what I've seen from his time at QPR, from speaking to people at QPR fans, I think he's going to be the real deal, and he's going to cause, you know, quite a few problems. So if we do lose Zaha, then Eze will just be the guy that slots in and becomes that star player, hopefully, you know, over time. But I really want to see Wilf and Eze play in the same team together. If we can keep Wilf, then yeah, I think that'll see us through this season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if he does play with Zaha and Eze in the same team, because Hodgson is obviously a manager that likes to have working hard and working back, something that Zaha sometimes doesn't do. But do you think that he'll be able to fit them both into the team?
I think surprisingly that pre-season has shown actually there's a fair bit of opportunity for change in this Palace squad. We actually played one of the games with Eze, Wilf, Townsend in the side, and it was great to watch. It really was, and admittedly it was against a League One side, but you know, they linked up really well, looked really good, didn't have too much of a concern at the back, but obviously, you know, we're not playing Premier League opposition. I mean, Eze's come to Palace, and he's bought into the what seems to be a new ethos at Palace, a new way of playing. So while Hodgson will always set up his sides staunchly defensive, I really think he's gonna give Eze and Wilf a lot more freedom to do what they want to do and just, you know, express themselves on the pitch. When you've got a core midfield of the likes of McCarthy, Luca, and you've got a strong back line and a strong keeper, you've got that ability to actually, you know, have the likes of Eze, Wilf, IU to link up together as that, you know, as that attacking force up front, which, you know, those three in the side. I mean, IU had a fantastic season last season. I still believe that went so under the radar. It's ridiculous. You know, we spent $2.5 million for him and he scored 9 goals for us, but he was instrumental in a lot of our results last season and he linked up really well with players. Those three playing together with the likes of Townsend as well, you know, chipping in. For me, that's quite an exciting, that's a proper rollback to the old Palace sides of, you know, attacking players and that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's going to be a certain amount of defensive play in that side. Hodgson will always do that. But I think, you know, you build from the back. And if you give players like Wilf and Eze a license to express themselves on a pitch, I see them causing, you know, a fair bit of damage to some of these players, like Wilf has already done before. So I'm hoping Eze will just follow suit. So fingers crossed that, you know, we can see a bit of, while we're looking at transition in terms of the squad and the age and bringing that average age down, I'm hoping that we see a bit of a transition in the way that we play as well, you know, in terms of allowing players to express themselves a little bit. But yeah, that's the hope. Fingers crossed it will work out that way. But I'm with a couple more additions, I'm relatively excited. I'm just hoping that we don't lose Wilf, but, you know, 4 weeks to sit here biting my nails on that one.
Yeah, moving on to Arsenal, you know, Dan, you've obviously done a bit more business this week. How are you sort of racing Arsenal season?
Top six, possibly. Top four, I think, is pretty unlikely right now, which I don't think that's the view of most Arsenal fans, at least that I talk to. But I don't know. It's been okay. The Willian one is really what I'm annoyed with. I don't like that deal. Even though I think he's a decent player, the reported years and money is kind of insane. I don't know. I'm Gabriel transfer. I don't know much about him, but it seems fine. I'm happy we got Ceballos back. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I'm pretty reluctant to think that we will get top four unless we, and like, no matter what we do. Like, I really don't think there's much of, we have a very good chance of making it this year. So it's kind of a weird offseason where I'm just kind of like, we just get some young players in and, or like young, verbally young attackers and hope they push on. Obviously, like, I don't know, there's a chance. We have to improve a lot. We finished eighth last year. We deserve to be there. I don't know. I don't know if we will get significantly better. And I think United and Chelsea have both. Well, United got significantly better from New York in the first half of the season. And if they have, like, any amount of attacking depth, they're a much better, they're a better team than we are. Chelsea, I think, are a pretty clearly better team than we are. Liverpool and City clearly are. So it is kind of a weird one where I'm not all that hopeful. And it's just kind of like all the transfers that would normally, you know, excite a better team, like the Thomas Partey links, I'm like, I don't want any part of them. Just because I don't think we should be signing players of that general age. I don't think Partey's good enough to make an exception for that. Same thing with Zaha, actually. We haven't really been linked this year, so it doesn't matter. but he's kind of that kind of transfer where, like, the, you know, the 28-year-old who's going to come in, or 27, Saha's 27, going to be 28, I think Partey's 26, going to be 27, or he's already 27, something around that age. Those kind of players, you know, the ones you would like, we would have liked to get back in, like, 2014, 2015. Now it's kind of like, I'd rather we go a bit younger. Even if that's not like 18-year-olds, more like 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds, something like that, more of a young, exciting prospect type than the sure thing. Let's get him in, because I don't think, even unless we get some, we find a pot of gold and get a lot more money than I am aware we have to spend. I don't think even if we sign a couple Thomas Partey's, Wilfried Zaha's, we'll be a top four team. So I kind of want to avoid those, which makes the transfer window less exciting, I guess.
Yeah, just moving on to Gabriel and the Saliba coming back from loan as well. Do you think that they'll come straight into the team, and could this finally mean that we don't have to watch David Luiz play for Arsenal? Or do you think that Luiz will still be starting next weekend?
I would definitely expect Luiz to start next weekend. Luiz is such a weird player, because he's honest, like, 90% of the time, especially in a back three, in a back four he's just not good. But in a back three, like 90% of the time, he's actually pretty solid, but it's the 10% is just so disastrous that he's no longer solid. So I do expect him to start the year, maybe play the whole year. It's hard to get a read with the younger center backs with such a limited preseason, and that's not getting to see much of it. And also, like, Gabriel's literally just come in now, so I'll be pretty surprised if he plays definitely this week, even in the first couple. I would expect him to get some time to bed in, especially considering we have a lot of center backs. We don't have a lot of good center backs. We do have a lot of center backs. So if he's not ready, it's not like we need to thrust him in to play a lot of minutes. We can kind of take our time. Saliba, I would have more of an expectation to start quicker. I could see him slotting into the back 3/4 quicker. Yeah, I'm not sure if he'll start, but I could definitely see him starting next to Luiz and Tierney in a back three on Saturday. I'm not sure it'll happen, but I could definitely see that. Whereas Gabriel, I can't see that.
Hopefully, Dan, for your sake, that Saliba and Gabriel can get into the team and lock down those slots. But moving on to Manchester United and Joshy now. We spoke about Donny van de Beek earlier. How do you rate that signing? And where do you think he will fit in to Manchester United's plans?
Lots of good questions. Well, I think the first thing to say is that I think he's not coming in to just slot into the first 11, I don't think, straight away. I think when you see him play, he's very clearly technically excellent, as are most of that Ajax team. He was part of that Ajax team that had that really great run in the Champions League. It broke up at the end of that season with a few transfers. And, you know, he's a great profile in terms of age. From what I read about him, you know, he's got the right attitude, a good trainer. He seems to fit in with this, you know, ethos of hard work and really working on his game. As far as I understand it, right, this is not, I don't have any sort of specific information myself. It's from what I've read. He's very versatile, again, like Ajax players tend to be. So, you know, I think he's a really good signing. He's an astute signing, and it wasn't for ridiculous money in this kind of day and age. I mean, £35 million is still a lot of money, but when you consider the likes of Grealish, though, you know, £70 million was moved for him, James Maddison, £60 million, and I think he's that type of player, like, kind of in that, certainly for Ajax, he played in those attacking roles. Attacking midfield roles, although he has also played deep as a kind of deep lying playmaker. I think overall, when he plays for Ajax, he plays in that box to box role. So what he'll offer initially, I think, is really good, a really good option for when we want to give Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba a rest and still retain that sort of technical ability inside. So I think Fred had an excellent season last year, but he's the kind of player that I think you need to have inside on a week-to-week basis for him to kind of build up some momentum of form. He's not so good when you're chucking him in sporadically, and we see that. And technically, I don't think he's on the level that you kind of want someone to be if you want them to kind of dictate play So I think Van der Beek gives that option to rotate in those areas. So yeah, for me, I think a really good signing. Certainly has to develop physically, I think, for the Premier League. Again, we'll see how it goes. I think if you look at, I hope that if, you know, he'll have the type of technical ability whereby the physical side of things isn't so important. If you think at like Bernardo Silva and David Silva, they adapted very well. But I think generally, if you're playing in that central midfield area, that physicality is something he's going to need. So that'll take a bit of time to adjust to. So I think overall, it's a really good signing. It adds quality to the depth of the squad and gives options in a number of areas because he's so versatile. And he's a good age. He can develop and grow with this side, which is young in general when you look around the attacking players, especially. So, yeah, I'm pleased with the signing. It's the other pleasing aspect of it, it wasn't one of those, as we discussed earlier, that was mooted around all over social media and the papers. It means that United have done some business quietly. And overall, it looks like a good signing. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think he's going to tear up any trees and I don't think he's going to kind of win Ballon d'Ors in the next couple of years. But I think he's a very good signing for the side. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play.
Yeah, and just moving on to the goalkeeper situation, which seems to be a hot topic regarding Manchester United at the moment. How would you like to see Manchester United sort of phase in Dean Henderson? And do you think that by keeping him around this season, you sort of have to play him more so than you did Romero last year? And could it be a difficult situation for Solskjaer to manage?
I think it's a good move, obviously, to keep a player of his quality. And he's, good, again, a good age, still learning his game. I think when you look at it, De Gea is still number one. He made a lot of high-profile mistakes. And actually, when you look at the sort of second part of the season, you know, after the restart, I think we conceded 13 or 14 goals in the matches we played. And 8 or 9 of them were down to individual errors. Like just specific, complete individual errors, and 4 or 5 of them were down to De Gea, and that's just not good. It costing us points, and in the FA Cup game, obviously cost us the game. So I think for De Gea, it will be good to have some genuine competition for that number one spot because Dean Henderson is not going to sit there and be okay with being a backup. He's been a first team player for a good few seasons now and in the Premier League last couple of seasons. So he knows the league, he knows he wants to play, and he's been a very, very good performer. He also has mistakes in him. Right? So when we look back on last season, he has made mistakes, but I think that's okay if he learns and gets out of his game. So for me, what it does is it provides competition for De Gea. The best case scenario, or however you want to look at it, one scenario is, De Gea feels that pressure, improves and gets back to his best. Happy days for me, as far as I'm concerned. Not great if you want to see the Dean Henderson develop, but then again, he's got to then up his level as well. The other scenario is Henderson comes in and actually is more reliable overall, and he takes that number one spot. And, you know, I love David De Gea. Right? I'm one of his biggest fans. I think he's just been an outstanding goalkeeper, but last two seasons, it's not been so good. And the last season particularly, he's been distinctly average. And I just hope that this sort of sharpens his focus or his mind, whatever the issue is. I'm not sure what it is. He can get to back to his best form. The difficulty for Ollie is obviously then that he's got two goalkeepers who want to play. So he's going to have to manage that, but that's a nice situation, as it were. You know, when you've got a selection headache, where you've got two good options, and you hope that they can both kind of do well, then that's a better headache than oh my god, everyone I've got is horrid. So you know, he's going to have to manage that. That's his job. So I think he'll get plenty of game time. We're going to have a lot of matches, and there's going to be a lot of condensed fixture sort of runs, right? So you're going to have lots of quick-fire games, and Henderson will get matches. And obviously, I hope we're successful, so the longer we go in the cup competitions, the more games we'll be hit with, and he'll get matches. So he will have the opportunity to kind of take that, but I'm assuming we go into the season with De Gea number one.
Yeah, it's a nice problem to have. I think Ollie would like to have two players of that quality in every position. So, yeah, it's a nice problem to have. But we are running short on time. So before we go, we'll just quickly have some quick match previews of the matches coming up this weekend. We'll start with you, Jay, and you host Southampton in your season opener. How do you think that one's going to go?
Yeah, interesting opener for us, actually. Southampton played very well towards the end of last season. Obviously, have the threat of Danny Ings. James Ward-Prowse always plays well against Palace as well. So I think it'll be quite a good matchup, and it's going to be very interesting to see how Roy Hodgson lines his side up against the Saints in this first game. I think it's really important to get off to a good start, as I mentioned earlier, because we had a horrific end of the season, even though we snatched a point in the final game against Spurs to stop it being 8 losses in a row. But that was just a horrific run. But I think sometimes you've got to think about how the fixtures are falling. So, you know, I think on one foot, you're looking at we got points on the board and we weren't actually in any actual trouble last season. And it's just a bad run of games. So I think, you know, if we hadn't got those points by that stage of the season, then we'd have been in a lot of trouble. So you could argue that we got the points on the board where we should have done ahead of that run in. So, I think it's important to get off to a good start. I think a lot of fans will probably take a point at home to Southampton, but yeah, first game of the season, I think you've got to start on the front foot, particularly at home. But again, you know, it's a very different scenario to start the season with no fans there. You could argue that, you know, the players are probably used to it after that 6-week stint to end last season. But I don't think players would ever get used to no fans being in the grounds, you know, for a long period of time. So I think it's going to continue to be a strange for them. As it is for us not being there. So that's going to be difficult because, you know, the atmosphere at Selhurst is always very good, and that ends up being the 12th man a lot of time, and, you know, the players often react to that. So I think that's something that, you know, might trouble Palace a little bit, because I think that was clear and obvious in that 6 weeks in the last season, hampered us a little bit. It sounds weird because, you know, the guys are out there playing football and they're being paid to play football. But, you know, I think some players, you know, thrive on an atmosphere at games and, you know, play better, play up to, you know, a good atmosphere. So I think there's a certain element of truth in that. But these guys are professionals. So I think it's going to be a good matchup to start the season. You know, we're not playing one of the top four sides, and it's a good opportunity to get some points on the board, and I think we will.
Yeah, moving on to you, Dan. Arsenal kick off the season away at Fulham in what will be the first game of the Premier League season. How do you see that one going? Are you expecting to go to newly promoted Fulham and win?
It'll be interesting. Away games have not been good for us the past 3-4 years. We've been pretty bad away from home pretty consistently under a number of managers. And Fulham will obviously be up for it with their first game back in the Premier League after a season out. But it'll probably be close. I'll say we'll win just to be positive going into the new season. And we really do need it because we start the season against Fulham and West Ham. Then we have Liverpool away, Sheffield United, City away, Leicester at home, United or Manchester United away. So it's a tough run after the first two games. So we really need the points now. We can get them. So hopefully we can take care of business against Fulham. I don't think it'll be as easy as we would like it to be, but it's it's 100% a winnable game, and I think when we can win. We can and should win.
Yeah, and Joshy, obviously Manchester United don't play this weekend because of their Europa League commitments, but how do you think the game against Jay's Crystal Palace will go the following week?
Well, I mean, I've alluded to it already. I think we've got a core group of players. Rashford he pulled out of the England squad, didn't he? So I think I don't know what that injury is about. I'm a little bit concerned about fatigue. I know the season hasn't started, but it's not been much of a break. And we did play into semi-final of the Europa League. So I would be surprised if we kind of kicked off, all guns blazing. I think it will, you know, we will take our time getting our rhythm. I think I'm a bit concerned just about how leggy the players will be. It's I'm not sure how much rest they'll have, and then there's, you know, lack of preseason. It's a very short gap between the two seasons, and I already mentioned the international break, which I think is a complete joke. But yeah, we'll see. We also have, again, also, you know, a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll get a couple of players in. You never know. I'm hoping we start off well, because we continue some of that form that we had after the restart. But, you know, Palace will have a game this weekend. Maybe blow out some of the cobwebs, and we'll probably be a little bit more match sharp than us. So I think it will be a tough game, and I don't see us sort of, you know, starting out the blocks quickly. I just have unfortunately, a little bit of a niggling feeling that we're going to be a bit sort of fatigued very quickly in the early matches in the season until we find a bit of match sharpness. So yeah, I think it will be one of those. Hopefully, obviously, as a fan, I hope we win, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm hoping for a couple of transfers as well. But yeah, no, I guess I'm looking forward to it, although I don't sound like it.
That we are now out of time, so just like to tell people where they can reach you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on again, guys. It's been good to look ahead to the new season. I'm Jay. I'm the editor of the Eagles Beak Palace Fan, so you can get us on Twitter at Eagles Beak. I'm also presenter of a sports community radio show. It goes out every Tuesday in a local area, but you can get online as well, and you can contact us at MeridianSS.
Yep, and I'm still Dan, still an Arsenal fan. You can still get me on Twitter at @B_Jersey_Fitz. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on as well. I'm Joshy. You can get me on Twitter at @MediJoshy. And yeah, just find me on there, and you'll see all the other stuff that I do. Cheers.
Yeah, and you can get the show at EPL Roundtable on Twitter, our sister shows at Championship Pod, and a new show that's come out on the EPL Index feed, which is hosted by Dave Hendrick, the 2-Footed Pod, if you want to give that one a listen. That should all be on our feed. You get me on Twitter at @JJackal2Ns, but that is finally, we are now out of time, and we hope you join us again next time.